Which disease has been described by cyclic fever since antiquity? That Greek physician and philosopher Galen once attributed its periodic nature to the different moon phases. The answer to these questions is familial Mediterranean fever. This disease is characterized by recurrent febrile episodes accompanied by peritonitis, synovitis, or pleuritis. There have been many other names to describe this syndrome, including periodic peritonitis, recurrent polyserositis, Siegel-Katten-Namu syndrome, and the malady periodique. Today, our patient has familial Mediterranean fever, and you are the doctor. Welcome to The Internet Work, a podcast written by internal medicine residents meant to serve you better on the wards and on call. Today's episode is entitled Stop the Attacks, an Approach to Familial Mediterranean Fever. All right, time for a minute physiology. Familial Mediterranean Fever, or FMF, is a hereditary autoinflammatory disorder characterized by recurrent bouts of fever and serosal inflammation. Autoinflammatory diseases differ from autoimmune diseases in that, rather than abnormalities of the adaptive immune system, autoinflammatory diseases are a result of hyperactivation of the innate immune system. In other words, antibody production is not the primary process. FMF is an autosomal recessive disease caused by mutations in the MEFV gene, which encodes a protein called pyrin. How does a mutation in one protein lead to systemic symptoms of fever and serositis, causing severe chest pain, abdominal, and joint pain? To understand this, we will go through the pathophysiology of the inflammatory pathway. Pyrin is a protein found in the cytoplasm of various cells, including leukocytes. During an infection, pyrin detects cellular proteins from bacterial toxins, which then leads to pyrin activation and the assembly of the NLRP3 inflammasome. Inflammasomes are multi-protein signaling complexes that activate caspase-1, which further promotes the activation of inflammatory cytokines and the innate immune system. In FMF, pyrin often has a gain-of-function mutation, so it activates without needing external toxins or an infective agent. It can construct inflammasomes following non-significant triggers, such as stress, cold exposure, heavy exercise, menstruation, or recent illness. FMF, as stated in the name, is commonly seen in individuals of Mediterranean descent, particularly people of Armenian, Arab, Turkish, and Jewish ancestry. The prevalence is 1 in 200 to 1,000 people in these populations, and less common in other populations. Most patients will present with their first attack during childhood, with 65% of patients having their first attack before the age of 10, and 90% of patients before the age of 20. Now that we've talked about the basic physiology, let's talk about the approach. As most patients with FMF will have had their first attack in childhood, your patient may already have a known diagnosis of FMF or have a history of recurrent attacks of fevers and pain that has yet to be diagnosed. In rare cases, patients will have their initial attack over the age of 50. The classic presentation of an attack is an abrupt and peaking fever and pain that develops over 2 to 4 hours. Some patients will experience an aura or prodrome before an attack. This can include irritability, anxiety, nausea, and myalgias. An attack typically lasts 1 to 3 days, but the duration can be anywhere from 6 hours to 4 days. These episodes will usually self-resolve, and in between attacks, patients can be completely asymptomatic. The time interval between two attacks can range from 1 week to several years, with intervals being irregular. As patients age, the frequency and severity of attacks will often decrease. Since a patient with FMF will present with fever, abdominal pain, chest pain, monoarticular joint pain, myalgia, or skin lesions, the differential diagnosis is wide and can include infection, malignancy, adult onset Still's disease, systemic vasculitis, other periodic fever syndromes, systemic rheumatologic diseases such as SLE, and other causes of a peritonitic abdomen such as appendicitis, bowel perforation, or cholecystitis. In fact, it is not uncommon for these patients to receive laparoscopic procedures as they are initially thought to have surgical abdomens. Your first step in any patient encounter will be to assess whether your patient is stable or not. Are their ABCs stable? What are their vitals? What is their level of alertness? As discussed previously, the differential diagnosis of FMF includes infectious and systemic rheumatologic diseases, in which your patient may present in an unstable state. Once you're sure your patient is stable, you can then move forward with your assessment. On history, you want to ask if the patient has had similar attacks in the past. You want to ask about constitutional symptoms for concern of lymphoma and other hematologic malignancies. Other features to ask on history that might point you towards an alternative diagnosis on the differential would be a history of symmetric polyarthritis of the small joints in the hands and feet, which could point you towards a diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis or lupus. Arthritis and FMF will usually involve the large joints of the lower extremities, such as hips, knees, and ankles. Other features suggestive of a lupus diagnosis includes a history of alopecia, oral ulcers, malar rash, photosensitivity, or Raynaud's. You should do a thorough review of systems to identify possible sources of infection as well. Ask about travel history to rule out other infectious causes of fever. You should ask about a family history of auto-inflammatory or autoimmune disorders. An important thing to mention here is that some conditions can coexist. For instance, a patient may have an FMF attack in the context of an acute infection. On physical examination, listen to the chest to see if there are any pleural rubs or friction rubs, which could suggest pleuritis or pericarditis. On abdominal examination, there may be distension, guarding, or rebound tenderness due to inflammation of the peritoneum. Joint examination may reveal monoarthritis involving the knee, ankle, or hip. Swelling and erythema are less common. Do a thorough head-to-toe examination to assess for potential infectious sources, including assessing for meningismus. The patient may have a slightly raised erythematous rash that is warm to touch, but usually not associated with pain or tenderness. Let's move on to our workup. You will want to order a CBC to assess for leukocytosis with a predominance of neutrophils, which you would see in FMF, but also in an acute infection. You will also want to order serum markers of systemic inflammation, such as ESR, CRP, and fibrinogen. These are nonspecific markers that are elevated in FMF, but also in other periodic fever syndromes, adult onset Still's disease, rheumatologic diseases, infections, and malignancy. Therefore, it is also important to order an ANA, complement levels, rheumatoid factor, anti-CCP, ANCAs, and a CK to rule out other autoimmune processes. Ferritin should also be ordered, as it is elevated in another autoinflammatory condition called adult onset Still's disease. You should order blood cultures to rule out an infectious process. If your patient is presenting with abdominal pain and your patient is a female of reproductive age, serum HCG should also be ordered to rule out pregnancy. Patients with FMF peritonitis may present with an acute abdomen. Therefore, abdominal imaging, such as a CT scan of the abdomen, should be considered to rule other causes of an acute abdomen. Similarly, patients with FMF may present with pleuritic chest pain due to pleuritis or pericarditis. Chest X-ray, ECG, troponin, and a BNP can be considered to rule out a primary cardiac cause of chest pain. If there is pericarditis, the ECG may show diffuse ST segment elevation. Depending on the clinical picture, it may be appropriate to rule out a pulmonary embolus with a CTPE or a VQ scan. Lastly, patients with joint pain and swelling may benefit from joint aspiration to rule out crystal arthropathies or a septic joint. In FMF, the synovial analysis may show an elevation in white blood cell counts, ranging from 200 to 100,000 white blood cell counts per millimeter cubed. Amyloidosis is the most common complication of FMF and a major cause of mortality in this population. During attacks, the body may produce a protein called amyloid A, which can build up in the body and cause end organ damage, particularly in the kidney. End-stage renal disease secondary to amyloidosis should always be considered in patients with FMF. Serum amyloid A protein can be ordered. However, CRP is generally considered a good substitute for serum amyloid A and can be more easily followed. Lastly, patients should be screened for proteinuria with a urinalysis or spot urine test. Genetic testing in the MEFV gene serves to support the diagnosis of FMF, distinguish the diagnosis from other periodic fever syndromes, and to counsel at-risk relatives. Of note, if a patient tests negative for the MEFV mutation, they can still have a diagnosis of FMF. However, this is uncommon. There are several diagnostic criteria that have been published for FMF, but the most widely used is the Tell-Hashimer criteria. It has a sensitivity of 95% and a specificity of 97%. The criteria consists of major, minor, and supportive criteria, with a diagnosis being made when a patient meets one major or two minor criteria, or one minor criteria with five supportive criteria. On to our treatment. Management of FMF can be split into acute management and long-term prevention of future attacks. Long-term prevention is particularly important to minimize subclinical inflammation to prevent the progression to amyloidosis. Initial management of FMF is with colchicine, which should be started as soon as a diagnosis of FMF is made. Colchicine inhibits neutrophil chemotaxis and has an inhibitory effect on macrophages, which includes the inhibition of the pyrin inflammasome. It has been shown to prevent FMF attacks, normalize inflammation between attacks, and slow the progression towards amyloidosis. The starting dose in adults is 1 to 1.5 milligrams per day, but may be increased to 2 to 2.5 milligrams per day if the attacks are long in duration, occurring frequently, and severe, including multiple body sites that are affected. Patients should be followed closely for the first 3 to 6 months to assess response to therapy and to monitor for colchicine toxicity. To monitor disease response, investigations will include ESR, CRP, serum amyloid A, and urine protein quantification. The patient's kidney and liver function should be monitored closely on colchicine as well. Maintenance treatment includes lifelong colchicine treatment, even during pregnancy and breastfeeding. For those patients who continue to experience FMF attacks despite colchicine treatment over 6 months, or for patients who are intolerant to colchicine, IL-1 inhibition can be considered with agents such as canakinumab, rilanocept, or anakinra. Additionally, TNF inhibitors such as adalimumab or etanercept can be considered for colchicine-resistant FMF. In cases where a patient has chronic arthritis associated with FMF, patients may require disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs, or DMARDs, particularly in patients with spondyloarthropathy. Time for a medicine minute. Did you know the use of colchicine as an herbal remedy dates back to at least 1500 BC? In the 1800s, two French chemists, Pelletier and Caventou, isolated colchicine from the Colchicum autumnale plant, hence its name. However, it was not until 1972 when colchicine was introduced as a prophylactic treatment in FMF. Thank you for listening to today's episode entitled Stop the Attacks, an Approach to Familial Mediterranean Fever. This episode was written by Dr. Sarah Choi, internal medicine resident, and reviewed by Dr. Marie Clements-Baker, rheumatologist, and Dr. Zijing Wu, general internist. This episode was recorded and produced by Dr. Allison Lai. Sound editing by Tony Walsh. The InterNetwork series was created by Allison Lai and is executively produced by Allison Lai, Zara Morali, and Leah Karyanopoulos. Theme song by Lakshmi Vasantha Mohan. As always, we have an associated infographic on our website at www.theinternetwork.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again soon.